This meeting is now being recorded.
Hi everyone, this is Denise Michelle.
Hi Denise.
Hello Denise.
Hello. Hello. We'll give people just a couple more minutes to join. Charlotte, could you do a quick roll call of who we have on the phone?
Hello, this is Steve Crocker.
Hi, Steve. This is Denise, and Charlotte was just about to do a quick roll call of who we have on the phone.
All right. I'm in a slightly disadvantaged position. I have a repairman here working on my network connection, which means two things. One is I don't have network connectivity, except a little bit through my cell phone, and I may get interrupted to deal with him.
No problem.
It's Bruce Tolkien's just joined as well.
Hi, Bruce.
Hi. Hi.
So in addition to Bruce, it appears that we have Aubrey Doria. We have Shireen Shelby. I believe we have Chris Spain. Dan Reed.
Yes, we do.
Susan Kawaguchi. And then for staff, we have Margie Milam and Lisa Pfeiffer, Marika Konings, and Denise Michelle. Great. Did we miss anyone who's on the phone? There are several lines that have not identified themselves. So now's your chance.
Give me your chance. I've been heard. This is Aubrey.
Okay. We'll go ahead and get started then. This is Denise Michelle. If everyone could mute their phones when not speaking, that would be appreciated. The agenda for today's call is in the email invitation. I'll also run through it to make sure everyone has it. It's number one, select confirm a chair for this group. Number two is review the chart that was distributed by staff. You'll find that in your email and on the wiki. Number three is next steps, and number four is any other business. With that, I note that Susan Kawaguchi, a GENESO Council member, volunteered to be the chair for this group. Is there anyone else? Is there anyone else who is interested in serving in this position? Okay. Hearing none, then I propose to turn this call chairmanship over to Susan.
Okay. This is your last chance to say, no, somebody else should do this.
And thank you, Susan, very much for volunteering.
No problem. Just as a FYI to everyone, I have not chaired. I've participated on many working groups but never chaired one. So bear with me if I step on anybody's toes with lack of process. So I think the first thing we should do, and is in the agenda, is have Lisa review the chart that she sent us, the sequencing of the EWG RDS principles, and so that we can all come to a firm understanding of what is in the chart. Lisa, can you do that?
Sure, Susan. Thanks. Can everyone hear me all right?
Yes.
Yep.
Great. Thanks. So at our last call, staff was asked to further refine the initial document that Margie had distributed that was a breakdown of some of the policy areas to try to better detail possible sequence of events and dependencies. So what you have in front of you is a five-page second draft of the sequencing of principles as input to a PDP. So I'm starting on the first page, the one that's shown in the wiki. I'll start with the overall organization of what you have in front of you, and then we can walk through a couple of examples. What you have in front of you is charts that detail phases of policy development and also subsequent implementation to try to help us understand where policy development begins and ends and then where implementation next steps would pick up. The charts actually start with where this group is today, that is developing an issue report and determining with available inputs how the PDP itself would be structured and what the PDP charter might be. That's followed then by a multi-phase process for the PDP working group. That's the basis for further discussion here. We were asked in the last call to try to use common project lifecycle phases as a way of talking about the phases of the PDP. So what you'll see is a phase one of the PDP working group that corresponds to a typical requirements definition cycle where policies are laid down as basically a foundation for more detailed policy making, so some foundational decisions that need to be made. Phase two then corresponds to functional design or functional specification, where you would drill into specific groups of policies that were established in phase one. And then phase three would go on to provide implementation guidance. That would correspond to a typical design specification phase, but providing implementation guidance for each of those phase two policy groups. These three phases would not necessarily be sequential, and I'll talk more about the dependencies and the opportunities for some parallel activity in just a moment. The output of those three phases then, though, would be the output of the PDP working group that would then go on to feed a series of next steps, including approval by the GNSO Council and Board before any implementation would begin. So if we go to page two, and Charlotte, do people have control of the screen? All right, you're displaying it. So what we see on page two here is, as discussed during our last call, we were asked to better illustrate some of the dependencies and opportunities for parallel development. Hopefully you can see the small writing on the screen here, but what you see here is the three phases of policy development that I just described. Over on the left, before phase one, you see where we are today in taking the existing issues report and perhaps redefining the issues report based on some of the policy areas that are being described by this group. But that would result in the initiation of the PDP working group, the approval of the PDP charter before we would get into the middle part of this diagram at all. Once you get into that three-phase process, in phase one, the PDP working group would examine all of the policy requirements at a high level before proceeding on to phase two. So that's why you see everything in that first column having the letter A. That's because we believe those are all integrally entwine and need to be discussed at a high level together before proceeding on to the next step. That means that the PDP working group would make some foundational decisions about all these areas, users' purposes, whether there should be gated access, how accuracy should fundamentally be addressed, how data element requirements should fundamentally be addressed, and so forth, before even moving into that middle phase. That middle phase, then, of functional design, in that phase, you would drill down, the policy working group would drill down into each of these areas, starting with users and purposes. So that's why that's labeled as B. We believe that would be the very first area of policy detailed design that would need to be tackled. For example, you couldn't go on to really design the details of anything around gated access or anything around data accuracy until you first understood some of the users and purposes detailed designs. After that initial effort, though, of users and purposes, it would be possible for the working group to go on and work in parallel aspects of gated access, work that in parallel with data accuracy, and work that in parallel with data element policies. We believe that those could be accomplished with some degree of parallelism, as well as starting to look at some implementation guidance related to the users and purposes that would have been completed in B. So that's the way to read this chart and the sequencing here. After phase three would be completed, the working group outputs would then feed into a number of next steps. Those next steps are going to be detailed on the very last page of this deck. Notice, though, that phases two and three, the functional design and implementation guidance, are shown as a bit of iterative activity because we do expect that lessons that would be learned when trying to establish some of that implementation guidance might cause the working group to go back and revisit some aspects of policy decisions that were made. That's actually what the EWG found when they looked in these areas, and I would expect that might also happen to the PDP working group as they work through some of these issues. Moving to page three. Here on pages three and four of the handout, you have actually the next level of detail on each of these policy groups, and this is the point that we need to really start working through each of these groups and see if the groupings make sense, see if the interdependencies and the order of these tasks really make sense. But what you see here, for example, under users and purpose, at the top left, you see some available inputs. Some of the available inputs there on users and purposes, that particular group of topics, includes Section 3 of the EWG's final report. That has a series of principles on users and purposes. Also in the EWG's report, there's an annex that contains use cases that were used to identify users and purposes, so that would be some input. The GAC put out a communique on who is principles, outlining some who is users and purposes that also would be considered as input in this step. And, of course, the Who Is Review Team report. And there are many other inputs, but the idea of this chart here is to list as a starting point some of the inputs that would be used by the PDP working group and used to develop the issues report that would launch the PDP working group. Continuing on horizontally on users and purposes, once the PDP working group was actually formed, the first task would be to consider all those inputs to establish requirements for any next generation RDS. That would include what users it must support, what purposes it must support, and principles that guide those foundational policy recommendations. Given that foundation, similar decisions could be made in the other areas that are listed under policy requirements here, and it wouldn't be until all of those were discussed at least at a high level and some foundational decisions reached that we would move into the policy functional design column. Once there, though, continuing on to the users and purposes example, once phase two began, the working group would consider the data that was needed for each permissible purpose that had been defined in phase one, the process for adding new purposes in the future, any policies associated with accrediting different types of users, that is, user communities that had been identified in the first phase. And so that would be sort of the next level of detail for each of these areas of users and purposes. Then continuing on to the right, entering phase three, there would be a potential for user guidance on users and purposes in many areas, but for example, guidance could be given on the criteria that accreditors would need to fulfill. That is, accreditors are the bodies that would vet and issue credentials to different kinds of users. Guidance on terms of service that each kind of user would agree to as a condition of access, and so forth. And once you got to implementation guidance, of course, that's driven by the decisions made in the previous two phases. Maybe there wouldn't be accreditors, maybe there wouldn't be terms of service, but just following on to what the EWG report contains, those would be examples of implementation guidance. So let me stop there and ask if there are questions about what you see in front of you, how this flowchart is laid out, the process that's being suggested.
Lisa Aubrey and Deb raised.
Susan, did you want to moderate at this point, or do you want me to?
Why don't you go ahead, Lisa? Sorry about that. I was looking for the hands and didn't see them. You go ahead, since it's definitely your expertise here.
All right. First up, then, Aubrey. And if you're speaking, Aubrey, we can't hear you.
Can you hear me at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
You've gone again, Avery.
It doesn't seem like people were able to hear me.
Right now we can.
Oh, okay. The concern I have, I think it's a good breakdown. I'm not sure that everything's in here, but it looks like it might be. I'm really concerned about the parallelism. I understand how the parallelism might be logically workable, but I'm really concerned about thinking that we're going to do too much in parallel simply because the number of people available to do all this different processes in parallel, the notion that we have, you know, six possibly parallel processes is a concern. So I hope that we're willing to think of it as parallel if possible, but sequential if need be. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you actually for pointing that out, Aubrey, because I should have stressed that these are opportunities for parallelism, but not necessarily places that you would have to do anything in parallel. I think next up is James.
Hi, thanks. James speaking for the transcript, and I appreciate the presentation and the overview. I'm on some pretty strong cold medicine, so if I haven't followed it entirely, I apologize in advance if I lost the handle here at some point. But I share Audrey's concerns about doing too much in parallel because not just that the pool of volunteers will be fairly small, and so we'll probably see a lot of people joining more than one of these efforts, and so essentially it becomes a part-time job for a number of people to participate in this effort. I also am concerned about managing interdependencies, and we've talked about that as well, and I think that actually vulnerability exists both in doing this in parallel and in sequence. I guess one thing I don't see here, and it's possible that it exists, and I'm just you know, a little too foggy to pick up on it. But what I don't see here is where this effort, you know, checks in with, let's say, the GNSO Council or some other chartering organization to, you know, to get a green check mark and move on to the next phase. I mean, does that happen, you know, in between the different phases, or does that happen, you know, at once at the beginning or not at all? And maybe that's just something that is implied here that I'm just not seeing. Thanks.
So I'll answer that second question first, and then I think probably Denise wants to address it too. But as far as the what's laid out in the chart goes, there would be an approval of the PDP charter before entering the big yellow block of three phases. And then, of course, there would be GNSO Council and board approval at when the output was produced. But I think your question is where within that process might there be checkpoints. Denise, was that something you were going to address?
I was going to just sort of validate. I also thought it was that's a good question, and it would be great to get input from the, especially from the GNSO members of this group, whether they think it's necessary and appropriate to reflect the specific council roles within this illustration or in a separate document. That's sort of a question to the GNSO members. So, and while you're thinking about that, I think another question I have, and as you know, we've talked a little bit about this in the past, we're also grappling with some really strong interdependencies in trying to map out, you know, what really should be handled together or in parallel, and what could be sequenced. So additional input from the members on that aspect of this design would be really helpful as well. Thanks.
All right, I see Susan's hand is up.
So to Denise's question about the where those GNSO council checkpoints would be, I think we should add that to a master chart. I'm not sure exactly where, but I think that would be extremely helpful just to keep us all on track and see, you know, so that we can always know, okay, we should go back now to the GNSO council. So I like that idea.
Steve, you have your hand up?
I do. Well, first of all, apologies again for troubles getting connected. I'm not sure where things are, but I had raised some what I consider to be big top-level issues about transition and about the effectiveness of the whole system, how do we get measures, and somebody else chimed in, Bruce, I think, with the economic model, the costing model. I'm looking at the slide that's up here, and I don't see any of those. They don't jump out at me, and I'm not sure whether I'm lost or – oh, there's a cost model.
Yep. So we're looking at pages 3 and 4 actually are a detailed version of what was on page 2. But as you can see, that once you get down to the page 4, you see the costing and risks, migration efforts. I think that we've encapsulated everything on here, but if you find – that we've missed some things, we need to factor them in.
Well, in the cost model that I'm looking at on page 4, I'm not 100% sure whether or not we're talking about the same thing. I see there's a ballpark cost for entire ecosystem. What was distracting me was the IBM RDS cost analysis, which is just one small part of the overall cost equation. The impact on the registrars and the users.
The list on the left-hand side, Steve. List on the left-hand
right.
side, Steve, is just stuff that may inform the discussion.
Okay.
Right. So walking through this particular row is another example. So some of the inputs that are available are the EWG principles on cost, the IBM report that was cost analysis for some components, and then you see also the impact assessment on ecosystem players, and that's in italics. That's a recognition that there's some input that doesn't exist yet,
right?
But that still needs to be developed as input to the process.
Good. Thank you. Maybe I didn't do my homework for this call that I should have done, although I thought I was keeping up.
Susan, Bruce, can you also add me to the queue?
Bear with me for a second. So that's the cost model. There's a transition and the effectiveness of the other two that were on my high-level list. Where are they?
Well, that's a good question. I know that in the compliance row, there's an establishment of some goals and metrics, and then if you look to the right, eventually there's definition of benchmarking that would be used to determine whether you met those goals and metrics. So that's part of the question you're asking, but not all of it.
Yeah, and I'm a little bit concerned because compliance, as we've experienced it, is focused on making sure that the contracted parties behave in a certain way. And the larger question is whether the whole system is accomplishing what it's supposed to. And viewing that as a compliance problem effectively misses the point.
Fair enough.
So what is the mistake? What are you not seeing that you want to see? Because I'm not sure that I'm clear, Steve.
This whole system is supposed to make it make something better. What is it that it makes better? Well, it makes better the law enforcement and the intellectual property and all of those people who have a need for more accurate information, and presumably goes directly to reducing abuse and improving things from their point of view. There's also this is also supposed to improve privacy in some fashion. So let me just there are probably others, but let me just take those two. How do we measure those? How do we know? How do we make the case that all of the work and cost that we're going to go through over the next many years is actually going to make a difference?
So let me briefly respond to that. That in the other row at the bottom, and other is, of course, a lame table or term for that entire row, but establishing a baseline of what are the risks and impacts and benefits that you're trying to achieve in the requirements column. And then into the design, there would be actually assessing some of those impacts, more specifically identifying risks. That's the are you making it better? What is the it in are you making it better? And then under implementation guidance, that's where you would actually look at, well, how do I know that I'm making privacy better? How do I know that the cost impact is worth it? So that was what that tried to encapsulate, perhaps not very clearly.
Uh-huh.
And so, Steve, if I may,
Denise,
so would it meet your and your suggestion if on slide 4 at the bottom under other guidance we were more explicit and detailed about the that this would be the point where metrics would be developed and agreed upon?
Yes, but let me also push a little harder and say let's raise this so that it's not in the grab bag of other, but is a first-class row of its own. And I think benefits would be a perfectly I mean, I feel comfortable with that. Maybe people have something else in mind. This is the R part of return on investment. The risks are a separate issue. So lumping risks and benefits together, I think is a mistake. But I very much like the idea of calling out explicitly what the benefits are and then moving those up to a top-level position instead of an afterthought in terms of tension.
Okay.
And it's very, very hard. It's not going to be easy. There are no ready, simple ways to get at this. I've had some fragmentary conversations that suggest that law enforcement has pushed very hard for what we're doing, and at the same time, they've got no data whatsoever to tell us about how this kind of data relates to any of the enforcement they're doing.
All right.
Okay.
I've made some notes from those observations, Steve. I know that Bruce was trying to get into the queue, so why don't we let him in now?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to comment on just going back a step on the phasing. And the role of the GNSO, which I think it is important to try and encapsulate that at a high level. But certainly what I would be suggesting is that you have a bit of a gating process. So effectively, I think it would be useful if the GNSO Council approved the output of Phase 1 and the output of Phase 2 and so on. Because if you don't lock stuff down as you go along, then you've got this sort of big mass of thing that will be going on for a couple of years with nothing locked down. And I think it's important that you're able to say, when you're dealing with the functional specifications, you can go back and say, okay, let's just check to see if that matches the requirements. And the requirements have actually been locked in some way. And you could even go to the board if you wanted to, and make the requirements policy, but that's, you know, I guess that's a decision for the council. But certainly I would be suggesting at the very least the council is able to, vote on and lock in the phases as they progress.
Okay.
All right. And Steve, is your hand still up? I'm going to take that as a no. James, you're in queue.
Thanks. James speaking. Okay. James speaking, and just wanted to agree with Bruce. I think that's one possible way of addressing this this issue of having the council check in so that that the work is lashing at some point and it doesn't go backwards from there. I think a couple of thoughts just about the phasing. One was that we've seen in other PDPs that are interrelated, particularly in the series of IRTP, working groups and some interplay between IRTP and PPSAI, that working groups will sometimes refer matters or issues or actions to other areas of work, whether it's appropriate or not. And if two working groups or two phases of this believe that something should move from one to the other, I think that we either need to have a mechanism to do that cleanly, and possibly with some oversight of council or board or this group or something, or we need to prohibit that entirely. And here's why, because we've seen a number of incidents, I think, where issues are not handed off cleanly, and what happens is both groups assume that the other group is going to tackle something, and it just kind of falls through the cracks. So that's just something I would want to point out as something I've seen firsthand. We kind of create those vulnerabilities when we go into this parallel mode. And then the second thing is asking is, I'm looking now at page 2 and 3, is, are these lanes severable? So, for example, if the privacy group comes out and, let's say, is unable to reach consensus on recommendations for, for the whatever privacy considerations or privacy elements were decided at the outset, do the other groups then just come to a screeching halt, or because there's this gap now where privacy was supposed to be, or can they continue without it, or, you know, is this whole effort a chain and each one of these is a link, and if any link is broken, does the whole thing stop in its tracks? So that's kind of my concern, and I guess that goes back to a dependency question, but really is how separable or severable are these lanes? Thanks.
So Susan is next in queue. I'd just like to take a minute to address a couple of the things that you mentioned, James. One is the EWG also, in many ways actually followed a model similar to this, where we did some initial work as a big group, and then we broke into subteams and we started to work some of these topics separately. And one of the things that we did to avoid gaps and to make sure that things weren't things did not fall between the cracks is that we cross-pollinated the subteams. So while every member of the EWG did not work on every single subteam, there was enough cross-pollinization that groups would bring to each other's attention when something hadn't been addressed or when some of the parallel work was veering off in different directions. The other thing I wanted to point out about the blocking aspect is that, you used privacy as an example here. Coming to some foundational decision on what the privacy requirements are does seem to be, at least in the way that this chart is laid out, a blocking requirement that some basic foundational decisions would need to be made to move forward. But once having done that, many other aspects of design could proceed without making any decision on the details of those, how to meet those requirements. But there are certainly some other aspects that would depend on that decision. And I guess the key to getting the dependencies laid out correctly here is to identify where blocking really does exist and to minimize those opportunities. Susan, you're up.
Thanks, Lisa. And to your point, Lisa, the EWG experience, I think, worked very well. Of course, it was a smaller team than a PDP, but by assigning, different topics to subteams, but everyone had a responsibility to make sure that all the pieces interacted well and we weren't missing anything, and I'm sure we didn't do that perfectly, but we spent a lot of time coming, the subteam would come back, report, we would discuss it and then point out things, holes that needed to be filled, or inconsistencies. And I think that model would work very well going forward, even in the larger group. It would just have to be managed extremely well. But at the end of the day, everybody understood the expectation was this is a recommendation to the whole group, the subteam's work, and each member had a responsibility to really delve in and look at the subteam's work for any of the issues that might have come out of that and had not been identified before. So I think if we could implement that in a PDP, I think it would be a workable solution to this because there are so many moving parts. I have a question for you, Lisa, and I may have just missed it, but is there a legal analysis anywhere in?
Yes, there is.
Any of these sections? Am I missing it?
It is in the privacy row on page 3. Okay, so it looks like we're
okay.
In think mode here, but yes. So there would have to be some initial discussion of the privacy requirements and then having gone into that overarching data protection policy. That's what the DP policy means in the functional design. Having developed some of that, there would have to be legal analysis to feed into how you would actually implement that policy in each legal regime that would be affected, obviously all of them.
So what you're recommending here is not to do sort of an overall top, you know, level analysis of data protection, but wait till we have some of the requirements lined out and then do the specific legal analysis.
The intent behind this diagram, and, you know, this is the starting point for discussion amongst this group, right? But the intent here is that during policy requirements that you would examine the data protection laws that, you know, would come into play in all of the legal regimes that would feed your data protection policy in the design phase, and then you would have to figure out exactly how to implement that during implementation guidance.
You know, my personal preference would be to do some of that work in the very first column to add it to, you know, right underneath GNSO, PPSI, AI working group output. But, I mean, I understand it's hard to have an analysis done when we really don't have a defined policy or requirement. I just think that's going to be a large hurdle to get over. And then the other question, I just want to clarify that I'm reading this right. Anything that's in italics on that first column are either, you know, in process or will be done.
That's correct. They do not exist.
They don't exist right now.
Right.
So, and then in the other column under the issue reports and inputs development, the Who Is RDS risk survey. So that would be some sort of a risk, maybe not assessment, but a survey of the current Who Is system.
Actually, you're referring to on page 4 in the other bubble. There's a line that says Who Is /RDS risk survey. So right above that, there's the EWG risk survey. That, as you know, because you were part of the effort, but not everyone on the call probably does, we did an initial gathering of risks through a survey, but that was based on a snapshot of the EWG's work, not on its final report.
Right.
So if there was a risk survey to be done, it should be done not just on today's Who Is, but also on the RDS as it was completely envisioned as feeding into the process.
But it would be on the current Who Is also, along with the
RDS.
Correct. Okay.
Well, that's a suggestion on this chart. Again, this is the basis for the discussion.
And do you think, you know, it's like reading your crystal ball, that might address some of Steve Crocker's concerns about law enforcement? I mean, that would be, it seems like we might be able to answer some of the questions there with that survey.
Sounds like a good vehicle to start.
Yeah. Okay. And that's all the questions I had.
I guess with the reference back to my question about law enforcement, say a little more about how you imagine the survey is going to relate to the question that I've asked.
So this is Lisa. I can take a stab at that. As part of the – now, the risk survey was not just a risk survey, but a risk and benefit survey, right? So as part of performing that kind of survey on today's Who Is, you could get at what is it that a group like law enforcement feels they benefit from today's Who Is, what is it do they feel like they are missing from today's Who Is. And I suppose the question then becomes how specific do you make those answers. But it could be a vehicle to start getting the detail that you're asking for.
So I think it's helpful to aim a little higher. And, you know, the worst that can happen is we can fail at that. But it isn't only a question of asking law enforcement how they feel about it, but of asking law enforcement to make the case to others that they're succeeding. You know, the example I've used multiple times is the chief of police comes to the city council and says, give me $1 million for more cops on the beat. And they say, okay, but we're expecting to see a substantial reduction in the number of muggings. And then sometime later, they want to see those reports. We don't have statistics that are geared toward the cost of the system, that the community, you can read community in multiple levels, the registrars and registries, the domain registrants, or the whole internet community. We don't have any statistics that relate the level of effort that we're putting into this to the improvements in the environment that we're trying to achieve. And having law enforcement say, well, it feels like it helps, is going to be very much on the weak side.
Excellent point.
This is Susan. You know, we don't have any very strong information on anything. We have a lot of gut feelings and anecdotal evidence. You know, I could tell you personally my experience with the Who Is, but we also don't have any, you know, and that would be that, you know, inaccurate Who Is a problem. But we also don't have any evidence on any privacy issues, and you hear a lot of anecdotal stories, but there's no true evidence of that either. So ICANN has never, except for the inaccuracy study, in the NORC study, has never studied this in such depth to get all of that information. But I think we're all going by a gut feeling that an improvement is necessary. Otherwise, why would the community been looking at this for so long? And I'm not sure how to get that. If there's an easy way to get that information, then we should do it. But if it's going to take us 5 years to design a study and study it, then I'm not sure that's worth it.
Well, to be a bit more explicit, I'm not suggesting that we should design a study. I'm suggesting something perhaps even harder, which is some structural improvements in the reporting mechanisms in the law enforcement and other communities that making use of this. We're in a awkward situation at the moment where we have statistics being thrown at us from the registrar saying, look, 1 million sites have been taken down unnecessarily, and we're causing a huge amount of harm. How do you counter that?
And that was something we sort of discussed last call. I put out a call for some information from my community because I think, you know, personally I am seeing good results out of domain names that were obviously inaccurate and were never forced to update their information. And now those domain names have been suspended. But once again, it's anecdotal. I could give you maybe 10 today that say, see, this worked. But, you know, so I think it is up to each community constituency within the ICANN community to provide some of that data and even anecdotal data And then because I would venture to say that that million sites, I'd like to see some data on that to know how accurate that is. But I would bet that, you know, you could identify a good portion of those that were domain name registrations that should have been suspended. I have also seen the other side where, you know, some domains have been suspended and people had no clue to why. But that's a domain management problem, in my opinion.
So my hand is up, Susan, when you have a second, please. It's Chris.
Okay, Chris, why don't you go ahead?
So I'm a little concerned that we're in the danger here of building up law enforcement into some kind of automatic block on progress here, in the sense that, you know, unless they do the following, then we won't do anything. So we have an issue in the current situation where law enforcement were part of the discussion on changes, a significant part of the discussion on changes to the agreement, and that those changes have taken place, and now the community is coming back to us and saying, you know, there is a downside to all of these changes, there may be an upside, but we're seeing a significant downside. Ignoring all the work of the Next Generation Registry Services, one of the things that we've talked about with current WHOIS is to go back to law enforcement and say, you want us to make some more changes, and we think it would be useful if you could at least talk to us about the effect of the changes we've already made. Part of the challenge with that is that there is no law enforcement constituency within ICANN.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no definition of what law enforcement is. And the way that it has been handled up until now has been through the GAC. And I suspect that that is the way that it will continue to be handled. So we talk about law enforcement as if we can interface with them on a regular basis through ICANN, and actually we can't. What we're doing is getting to law enforcement through the GAC, and that's going to continue to be the case unless there is a structural change to the ICANN model and law enforcement agrees to become an integral part of it, which currently they're not. So I'm not suggesting that what law enforcement thinks isn't important, and I'm not suggesting that they shouldn't be called upon to explain the benefits of any changes that should be made. But I do think that we need to remember that they especially, we are effectively talking about dealing with them through the GAC under the current circumstances. And that's a slightly different thing from simply saying ICANN can go to law enforcement and ask them to provide us with evidence.
So with due respect, Chris, I understand what you're saying, and yes, as a formal channel, the GAC strongly believes that they are the proper interface for law enforcement because law enforcement is part of government and they are government. I think that's a relatively incidental aspect. We certainly have seen regular participation from at least a handful of key law enforcement people, and I don't think it's very hard to get access to them. I think what is hard, however, is for them is to answer the kind of questions that I'm putting forth, because I don't think they have the data. Now, what I'm trying to trigger here.
Who is them? Who is them? That's my point. Do you mean the US and the UK and Europol? Do you mean Russia?
Yes. I mean, so there's a couple of different dimensions here. Let's just start with the ones that are easy to find. So there's the US, Canada, UK, Europol, and probably a handful of others. But let's just start with them. They're the ones that have been pressing hard for improvements in our WHOIS system, and what I'm saying is, okay, can they make the case that if we make those changes, will they have the data to show how much of an improvement that's made? And they're not in a position to do that at the moment, and it's not an ICANN-specific issue. It's a much larger issue. But I think we have a legitimate role in saying, look, everybody's benefit to get some to close the loop here, to connect these dots. Let's find a way to work toward that. Now, it may take some things that are fairly big, and it may take a while, but I think that we would be falling way short if we don't raise these issues, and this is the time to do that. Maybe it should have been done even earlier.
So, Steve, I want to, if you don't mind, Susan, I just want to respond to that, and then I'll mute my microphone. Steve, I acknowledge that, but maybe I have misunderstood. But I thought what you were saying was, unless we can get law enforcement to do X, to give us the evidence that this is of benefit to them, then we should not move forward. The general feeling I got from the statements you were making was that you thought that this was a precursor and something that had to be done. And what I'm saying is, I think it's great if we can do it. We're going to try and do it in respect to the current WHOIS and the changes and you know, the next level of changes that are supposedly going to be made. But I got the impression from you that this is like a hurdle we had to get over before we could proceed.
I understand the form of your question, Chris. So I'm trying to have it both ways here. Frankly, I'm trying to say we have to do this, and I'm trying hard not to say. And if you don't, here's what will happen, because I don't want to get into a hassle about negotiating about whether this is a blocking item or not. I want to come at it constructively and say this has to be done. Some people will interpret that as a blocking item. But I don't want to get into a discussion of whether it should or shouldn't be a blocking item. I want to get into a discussion about how to get it done.
All right. We have a few people in queue. I think we've talked about this enough to have documented what the concern is.
And thank you. And I appreciate your tolerance of my belaboring the point here.
My pleasure. James, I think you're next.
Hi, thanks. So I'll be brief because I don't have a quick question. I agree. I think to Chris's point, there is not a monolithic group or number or person we can go to as law enforcement. Although I will point out that they were a lot more united and vocal when the requirements were being developed than after they've been implemented. But my observation is it's not really a question of something is blocking, meaning that something is an all or nothing proposition. I think what we're seeing with the RAA and what we're going to see with as we proceed down the path of EWG is that we have to make some determinations of something that's, for example, 95% accurate versus 97% accurate, or has a rate of false positives of 1%, which could translate into millions of domain names, versus 0.1%. And if the cost differential is, several millions of dollars on the registry and registrars, who's going to make the determination that it's worth chasing those extra decimal points? I think that's the question that we're trying to say. When we say law enforcement, it's really a catch-all for who is the requester that's going to say, yes, this is worth it to us, and we can demonstrate that those costs are justified. So I think that's how it's going to present itself. But my question is really with regard to setting up either at the outset when this entire plan, this group that we're talking in now, presents this plan, sends this over to, I guess, the council or the board, and then each of these individual phases kicks off, presumably with some milestones or check-in points, and then, of course, the ending output. At what point do we have consultation, public comment? Is that also at the beginning and the end, or would there be something intersessionally in the middle as well, which would say, here's where we're at thus far. Before we go any further down the road, can we take the pulse of the community and see if we're on the right track? And can that be built into this chart? Thanks.
Marika?
Thanks, Lisa. So maybe just, this is Marika, so maybe following on James's question, it may be helpful just to briefly remind everyone of the different steps in a PDP, because as my understanding is, what we're discussing is here is really, you know, how do we move this all into the PDP and the different phases that are associated with that. So I think as Lisa already pointed out, you know, the first left-hand column, that's really the issue report development stage. There is first a preliminary issue report that's published for public comment. So everyone is invited to comment. Did, you know, staff cover the appropriate information? Is there anything missing? Any, you know, positions or data that should be included? As that is the brief that's basically handed to the PDP working group as the information they're expected to consider. As part of, you know, recent efforts from the GNSO Council to streamline the PDP process, we currently also include a draft charter or draft proposed charter as part of the preliminary issue report, in which, you know, based on the work of what the group is doing here, we probably would follow the kind of like phases that have been described, you know, some of the approaches that have been suggested, and use that as a basis for a possible charter, which would also go out for public comment. So again, give people an opportunity to comment on the work of the group. You know, do people believe that that's a good way forward? You know, did we miss anything? And based on the input received as part of the public comment period, you know, staff then produces a final report in which we make, you know, any updates in relation to information missing, any suggestions that are received, you know, we'll directly pass on to the council for their consideration. And then we move on to the, you know, the initiation phase. You know, as this is a board-initiated PDP, there's no intermediate vote, although the charter process does require, of course, a vote by the GNSO Council. Following that, you know, charter is adopted, and again, that may be on the basis of the charter that was in the preliminary issue report, and your council has there the liberty to either, you know, take that charter as a basis, modify it as it wants, or just, you know, start from a blank sheet of paper and develop the charter, which then is voted upon, and following that, the PDP working group is formed. I think as already pointed out in the chat as well, you know, there are a number of minimum requirements that exist within the PDP working group, one of which is, you know, to obtain input at an early stage from all the GNSO or stakeholder groups and constituencies, as well as reaching out to other ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees for their input and feedback. On the basis of that, you know, the working group has a responsibility to review that information in detail. On the basis of that, the working group will produce an initial report, which again goes out for public comment and discussion and review, after which then, taking that into account, the working group will produce a final report. However, those are minimum steps, and nothing would prevent the working group and or the council to build in additional checkpoints, or if there are certain questions that they believe, you know, require public or community input, to take those intermediate steps, either through public comment or sessions at ICANN meetings or surveys or whatever means the working group believes is the most effective mechanism to obtain that input. And then, you know, following final report, GNSO Council approval, there's another public comment period that's required before the board considers it. So that's another opportunity for community to express their views on the recommendations that, you know, are at that stage adopted by the GNSO Council, and the board is expected to consider next. So there are already a number of opportunities for public input and solicitation of input from the broader community built into the PDP process. But as I said, nothing prevents the PDP working group or the GNSO Council to build in additional steps for community input and consultation.
Thanks, Marika. Susan, you're next in queue.
And actually I have a question on I'm a little bit confused on what is the final report? Where in this list, if you're on page 2, is that? So there's an issue report which will come out of this group. Staff is putting it together, right? And then there would be a public comment period, correct?
Correct.
And then what step is the final report?
So this is Marika. In the current framework, staff basically has 45 days after the preliminary issue report has been published for public comment and the public comment period has closed to update the final report and deliver that to the GNSO Council. As said, you know, the real purpose of the public comment period is to identify, you know, did we miss anything in the issue report? Is there anything that the GNSO Council should consider as it takes next steps? It's not intended to already start putting forward solutions or proposals. That really needs to go into the PDP working group. But as I said, as we're looking here really at, you know, quite complex issue, and as I said, you know, there may be recommendations for, you know, sequencing or parallel phases. Of course, one option you may want to consider as a group that, you know, as feedback comes in, it may be helpful for staff actually to consult back with this group and saying, well, this is the feedback we have received on, you know, the approach that you as a group have outlined and you know, thought through. On the basis of that, you know, do you believe that we should, you know, make those changes, or, you know, what do you believe we should be doing? Or that is something as well we can pass on as we produce the final report. So I think there are ways we could deal with that, and that really depends as well on the kind of feedback that is received. But that would be basically the next step after preliminary issue report, producing the final issue report.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. And so, Steve, back to your LE issue, do you feel like the comments on the preliminary report would provide some of the information you're looking for?
Well, frankly, I had in mind a much bigger venture in which we carve off the need and sort of raise up the goal of getting connecting the dots and getting closure on this, and bring the people who have been pressing for these improvements, law enforcement, intellectual property, and others, and work with them in a way that's probably different from the basic PDP process, and say, look, you're not structurally organized in a way that gives you a defensible case. Let's work together so that you guys work in that direction. This is all part of becoming adept at living in a network environment. You know, if you look behind the scenes law enforcement, you get the guys who are taking down sites and taking complaints. But if you go up the hierarchy, you have people who think about things, who propose model legislation, who do longitudinal studies about things, look at the relationship of enforcement techniques to the rate of crime and so forth. Our environment is not yet, I don't think, part of that system. That means getting the academic community, you know, the academic departments that have studies in this area, the think tanks that serve the law enforcement community. We haven't touched them yet. Now, I'm sure that several of you are shuddering and saying, oh, my God, this looks like an unapproachable problem and it will stop everything. And I'm not trying to go that far, but I am saying, look, we've got a very reasonable case to present, and this is the time to engage them. It is a worthy goal, and it's somewhat on the large side, but that's what we're about here, not just saying, well, we're going to jigger the system a little bit and crank up compliance and then declare that we've succeeded. I think we can aspire to a much bigger goal structure here. And I think we can bring in the people who are who should be part of this, who have not yet even begun to think about any of this, and are not part of what we currently consider to be the ICANN community.
So, just if I can take be liberal with my chair position and respond to that, I'm all for bringing in anyone that is not in the ICANN community and is not focused. I think more focus on this issue is really important. But I'm a little bit bothered that you would think that we don't have the expertise in the community now and would want to bring in think tank people that probably have very few have ever looked at the Who Is record and has any experience with it. And in fact, I would contend that most of the law enforcement research is not done by law enforcement. There are some teams that do a lot of it, but there are many, many companies, registrars, probably registries, companies like Facebook, and, you know, Semantics, and, you know, a lot of different companies out there that probably have the expertise and the knowledge and experience of working with the Who Is and could have seen what has happened in the last 9 months. Getting somebody to think about this problem at a high level is fine, but, you know, my experience is either you understand the Who Is record or you don't, and most people don't. And most people don't use it. I think more people should. But, you know, you have communities within our constituencies that have been pushing on their own law enforcement within their countries, asking for change, and the law enforcement may have been the vehicle or voice. But, you know, you're really coming back to probably to the IPC and the BC. And even the registrars, I would think, have a lot of experience with working with law enforcement and what they're asking for and seeing all the problems in Who Is. And those people on the ground who work with the Who Is record day to day and review thousands in trying to solve a problem, those are the people I would consult if we're going to go out there and consult. So I think we're, you know.
I'm okay with all of that. I think I appreciate what you're saying. One way or the other, is there a way to have reports of, you know, measurable results and that provide a, you know, just to reiterate our catchphrases, accountability and transparency. Is there a way to have you know, an annual report on the level of abuse and the effectiveness of the Who Is system that stands up to sort of basic you know, the basic rules that any of us bring when we are being told this sort of system is important because it makes life better. I mean, we have regulatory systems all over our lives. And
right.
We have, you know, trucks are checked for, you know, whether they're carrying too much weight and whether the drivers are exceeding their physical limits of staying awake. And in principle, that's related to the number of accidents, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's nothing super deep about what I'm saying, but I think that we do not yet have basic models like that in place. And I'm saying, one way or another, whether it's law enforcement community or whether it's the you know, Facebook and others that are doing the work, let's have some shareable data and be able to make the case that this is actually improving things.
Okay. So maybe we need to put this into the next step category and into the think about it for the preliminary report, the issues report. And Dan, you were up next.
Thanks. I just, yeah, at the risk of maybe belaboring what Steve was trying to say, Steve, what I heard you effectively arguing for was that we need to take a strategic approach to this rather than a tactical one, thinking about a broader solution rather than simply a more narrow one that may satisfy the letter of this issue, but not necessarily the philosophical principle. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, it's certainly true. That, I mean, we view this whole effort as a strategic change, not just a tweaking of the current system. And so it's definitely part of the idea that this is a strategic change, that we want to look at this larger the larger picture here.
Okay, thanks. That's what I thought.
Okay, so we only have about 15 more minutes. So, Lisa, what are the next steps for us?
So, sorry, let me. There's one other thing that I wanted to share with this group along this line. If you step way back and look at the history of registration data, in a lot of situations, certainly in the network solutions many years ago, and also in a number of different countries, the CCs, there's been a general evolution from very tight rules to looser rules. So in the old days, if you wanted to register a domain name, you had to provide proof of identity, faxing your driver's license and so forth. And the same has been true in various countries. Over time, those have all been loosened up because they were considered to be quite expensive and onerous, and that has put us in the position that we're in now. So the question is, one way to frame the question is, how do you know where along that spectrum is the right place? Because now we're in the opposite swing of the pendulum, where we're saying, gosh, it's been so loose that we just get lots of abuse. And so I just wanted to show that there is a sense of history here, and we don't have the data to know where we want to be. And I'm not talking about to the second decimal place. I'm talking about just even rough order of magnitude. So with that, I'll subside. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. So back to you, Lisa. What do you think the next steps are?
Well, I think we've identified through today's conversation, we've identified a number of items that aren't addressed on the proposed process that's in front of you. So staff could incorporate those, and we could raise a couple of those for further discussion on the email list. For example, where is the right place in the process to have the checkpoints between the working group and JNSO Council, and also between this entire process and the community. But I think also everyone perhaps needs, now that we've had an opportunity to understand what how the chart is structured and what the basic flow is, have an opportunity to review the chart in more depth and identify what's missing here. What are some of the inputs that are missing? What are some of the topics that need to be discussed that are missing? Are there dependencies here that aren't reflected? So maybe one of the next steps is to for everyone to do that review and provide that feedback that staff could incorporate it into an updated version of this chart to move forward. That's one suggestion. Others?
That sounds good to me, though I think we should put a timeline to that or a deadline. Any other input?
That's a good suggestion. How much, do people feel comfortable with staff synthesizing the conversation we had today, coming out with another draft of this illustration in an attempt to capture the input and guidance we received, and then discussing it online and in advance of the next conference call?
It's fine by me.
And I just wanted to add, this is Margie, when do we want to schedule the next call? We did talk about monthly meetings with the idea that we would do work in between the meetings. Is that still the plan we want to proceed on as we go forward, or do we want to have the meetings more frequently? I'm fine with the, for at least right now, for, you know, doing a call in December just because it is the holidays are coming up. It makes things a little bit crazy. What I do wonder is what other people on the team think, you know, do we want to set some sort of timeline out there to work towards? You know, are we going to be talking about this for the next year, next 3 months, next 6 months? I think it would be good to get a consensus on what the expectations are of the group. Dan, is that a hand, or did you, or is that left up from last time?
It's left over, sorry.
No problem.
So perhaps it would be useful if staff came up with a proposed sort of timeline. It'll give people something concrete to respond to, and perhaps through that we can then come to a collective agreement on how our work is going to progress and when we expect to be done. Does that sound acceptable? I see a check mark from Chris.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. I think it would also be helpful, Denise, for in our timeline that we put forth to actually sketch out what the deliverables of this group are as well, so that we know when we're done.
And then I just had another question, more with how this process works. So if we issue a preliminary report, will the board make a decision at that point, or will the board want to wait for the comments? The public comment period to be over, and the final report.
And now you're speaking of the preliminary issue report. That's the first step in the PDP process.
Correct.
From the output of this group, yeah.
Yeah, and I am getting that confused.
So I don't think the board makes a decision, Susan. It basically. It really goes into the GNSO process. I think the board's involved here because we're trying to make sure that we get, you know, the right information and structure put in place and the right resourcing from staff. But, you know, as far as I understand, the board's kicked off a PDP through that process of asking for an issues report, and then after that it's the GNSO's decision, isn't it?
But the board could give a recommendation, couldn't you?
A recommendation on what, though?
On the music. I apologize.
I am sorry. Charlotte will,
yeah,
the line.
Yeah,
I guess it's just a question. Yeah, normally the board process is the board can initiate, this is just per the bylaws, the board can initiate a PDP by requesting an issues report, and then it follows the process in the bylaws. I think the reason why the board's having this sort of joint call at the moment is that we feel that unless we structure the work collectively right, then, you know, it may fail. So we're just trying to sort of get that right. I'm not quite sure what you'd want the board to do other than that, because wouldn't it be seen as interfering if we started to, I don't know, tell the GNSO how to do particular process steps?
No, but it would be interesting, you know, I mean, everyone looks to the board for insight, and if the board felt this was an important step to take, in a way, just because you've initiated the PDP process, I guess that is.
I mean, we could probably just do that through the board meeting with the council, Susan, so we meet at each meeting. And I think if this output was, the output of this group came up with a process that looks feasible, We could take it back to the whole board and take the board through it, and then the board could say, you know, we've reviewed and this seems really good. I hope you guys will use it. I'm not sure that a board resolution is required though at this stage.
No, I don't think I was thinking a resolution, but more along that line of recommendation of like, yes, we back this or we think this is worthwhile to start this process.
Yeah. I think that's the point, is we're trying to do it collaboratively rather than sort of passing resolutions. So, I think we would probably, this group, you as chair would say, this group has been meeting and this is what we've come up with. The board has reviewed. Steve could say the board has reviewed this and thinks it's a good idea. Presumably Jonathan could then represent the council and say, look, the council's reviewed it. And if there's any suggestions the council might have, the board might give comments, but really I think we're trying to hand this over to the council.
Okay. All right, so was there any other business that we need to take care of on this call? Denise, is there?
No, I think we're set. We've got the action items. We'll follow up on this call. Thank you, everyone, for a very productive call, and thank you, Susan, for jumping into the fire, so to speak, and sharing this call and future ones.
Indeed.
Okay, well, just bear
thanks.
With me. So, okay, thank you all. You get a
thanks,
whole
everybody. Bye.
Bye, thanks.
Thank
bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Thanks,
bye. Bye.